So, as I said, so it's not clear to me if the facilities here really are better than in 6180, if only because it takes me time to set it up, to clean my desk. We have to decide which room is better, okay? So we will decide at the end of the hour. Also, it's actually a bit hard to capture on video both screens, so I'm not sure I've done well. Anyway, let's start. So, okay, reminders. So again, you must have Mathematica. Yeah, maybe that's another disadvantage of this room. If you wanted to bring a laptop, you can't, or it's harder. If you must have Mathematica, again, you must play with these things along. And we still aren't decided about changing the meeting time. So, or maybe we have decided. So are we final that we want to meet on Tuesdays on 12 instead of at 11? Is it good for everyone, 12 to 2 on Tuesdays?
Yeah.
Except one, of course.
Does 1 to 3 not work?
It's what?
If we're going to move it anyway, does 1 to 3 not work? Just because it conflicts with GLAB, which I occasionally want to go to. But
1 to 3 is okay with me. Is this okay with you?
If we're moving it anyway, I would prefer that.
So, I mean, I would rather move it to a time that would be good for Juan as well, but I think we failed.
No, that's fine.
And it's going to be, I mean, I'm after the break, so next week is reading period and there are no classes, and after that, I want to swap the brute and the gentle. So it will be more brute and less gentle.
Could we not add an hour on Friday?
It's a bit tough for me because I teach on Friday another class. So we could add an hour, but at 10, and then Travis will not come.
Why not?
It's before my awake time.
So wait, is Tuesday 1 to 3 okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So next class. Tuesday, what does it come out to be? About 10 days from now, 11 days from now? So now plus 11, I'm not sure what the dates are, roughly, approximately, at 1 to 3 p.m. Okay, good. Okay, so again, we had the Lie algebra G0, and it's the zeroth in a class of algebras that we're going to play with. And we're almost understanding it yet, already, but not quite, okay? And once we understand it, we will start playing with more complicated algebras and get more sophisticated invariants, okay? So, just to remind you, the Lie algebra is on the screen. So, E bracket L is negative E, F bracket L is F, E bracket F is H, H with anything is central. And there is a three-dimensional representation written here, and again, I'll have to see if it appears on video at all, but anyway, is this visible for you, though?
Yeah.
Okay. So, last time we checked that this really is a representation, and since I modified the way it is checked, let me check it again. So, hit enter, and, see what happens, and I should have hit enter here, and then I get five true, six times the word true, which means all the brackets are verified, so good. Okay, then we implemented G0, and I don't need to go through it again, it's just repeating, and then we had this theorem saying that the R matrix, the value of the crossing, is given by this ordered exponential written here. And again, this is something that can be verified in that one representation. So here is the verification. the two sides are equal. And then we defined a little program, which I still haven't gone through the details of how it works, but it's really little, so it's not much. And this program computes ordered exponentials. So you feed it with a polynomial and then some specifications, and it will produce, so the output will be sort of a number of copies of the universal enveloping algebra as specified by the specifications, and then the variable of the polynomial placed along these copies in the appropriate order, okay? And that's exactly what we need in order to compute knot invariants, okay? So, for example, let's compute the invariant of the trefoil. So the trefoil involved three crossings, and each crossing was this funny exponential. So here is a crossing between strand 4 and strand 1. Here is a crossing between strand 2 and strand 5, or more precisely, location 4 along the trefoil and location 2 along the trefoil, and so on. And here is a crossing between location 6 and location 3 along the trefoil. And then I compute the ordered the ordering symbol of this exponential with the variables ordered by location, so L1, F1, E2, L3, basically in the correct order, and the result is, after 0.781 seconds, you get that this is the invariant of the trefoil, and this really is the invariant of the trefoil. And I just gave it a temporary name, T1$1. Why? You'll see later. It's totally unimportant. Just the value is given this name. And then we had a lemma, which allowed us to commute certain variables across others, and I asserted that with this lemma you can compute anything, and I want to show you that indeed this is the case today. So that's one of the goals for today, okay? And then, but first of all, we have proved this lemma, okay? Namely, we've proved 1 and 2 in full, and 3 only in the case where delta is equal to 0. So, and the proofs were, since 1, 2, and 3 in the case where delta is equal to 0 are just equalities of exponentials, or of exponentials of elements of the Lie algebra, then you could just use the representation. So you compute in the representation. Let's do all computations at once because I'm lazy. And in both cases, in all three cases, you get the same matrix on the left as on the right, and therefore all three are equalities. If delta is not equal to 0, then you have here delta EF, so it's the exponential of something quadratic. And then I don't know how to prove such a thing using representation theory. Or maybe I do, but not right. Let's say I don't know how to prove it with this representation in this way. You have to go somewhere else to prove it. Okay, anyway, then we had the main G0 theorem, and I just want to state it. Okay, so the theorem says, there is a raw version in which the, which is absolutely correct, but it can then be simplified. So at the end of the handout, there is a simplified version. Even before we get to the but let's first do the raw version, which is a bit easier to understand. Okay? So the G0 invariant of any S-component tangle can be written in the form. So the invariant of the tangle is the ordering of something of the form omega times e to the l plus q, and I have to explain what all of these things are, where you order it in the elf order. So along each strand, so when you compute along each strand, you first put the e's and the l's and the f's. Okay? So in fact, I could have chosen another order, I just have to choose some specific ordering. Okay? And then, but the claim is that when you do it in this way, then omega is a scalar. But when I say scalar, I mean something a bit more complicated than just a number. So remember that, well, I had the extra variable h. And in fact, I have one h for each strand, right? Because each copy of the universal enveloping algebra has its own h. And the h's are central, so I can pull it out of as coefficients. And when I do that, my scalars become power series in the h's. Okay? But I assert further that these power series are particularly simple. Namely, they are always the Taylor expansions of rational functions in the variables hi and their exponentials, which I often call ti. Okay? So that explains omega. Omega is a scalar. L is a quadratic form, so it's quadratic in the hi's and lj's with coefficients aij, so it's a sum of aij, li, hi, aj, where the summation runs over the strands. The word balance just means that I'm balancing the h's and the l's. So there are no terms with two h's and no terms with two l's, only h times l, okay? So it's balanced in these variables with integer coefficients, okay? And finally, where Q, so Q is a balanced quadratic in the EIs and FJs with coefficients which are scalars, meaning the coefficients could be complicated, okay? Furthermore, you know what? Let me cheat. I claim that this invariant is already has the potential to be polynomial time computable. Why? Because at least it doesn't crash on the obstruction that representation theory invariants crash on. Namely, if you have a tangle with n strands, well, if you had used representation theory and you'd have a matrix for each strand, then you'd be talking about then you'd get a tensor product of matrices for the whole thing, and a tensor product of matrices has dimension exponential in the number of strands. And if you're working about if you're composing a big knot from small pieces, then as intermediate steps, you will have you'll have tangles with a large number of components. So at intermediate steps, you'll have values in spaces which are of exponential size, and to just keep track of these spaces, you need an exponential amount of time. Okay. So here, this isn't the case, because the invariant now, or how much information is there in the invariant? So what is the sort of dimension of the place where the invariant takes place? I don't think I gave it a name. The dimension of the space of formulas of the form e to omega times e to the l plus q. Okay? So the answer is, well, how much information is there here? So if the tangle has n strands, then this is a quadratic form in n variables. So it's just a matrix. It's just Aij. It's just a matrix with n variables, with n entries. This is also just a matrix with, sorry, n squared entries. And finally, this is a scalar. So it appears as if the rough dimension over the space of scalars, well, I mean, this is not even a scalar, but it's a kind of, it's roughly n squared. It's n squared plus one, or n squared plus a few integers or something, okay? Now, n squared is not exponential. So in principle, you only need to manage a polynomial amount of information at each step. Okay, that's a lie. And the lie is because the scalars are rational functions. Okay, rational functions are just quotients of two polynomials, so same measurements as polynomials, but they're polynomials in n variables. Also, you can estimate that their degree, so, you know, well, first of all, the space of polynomial is infinite dimensional. So, I mean, just the amount of information in each Bij is infinite, in principle. However, you can bound the degree of these polynomials. So basically, you can show that they don't, that if you have a tangle with n crossings, the polynomials are not going to grow more than degree n. Okay, basically that's not all the formulas. I haven't shown the formulas. They don't raise the degree by much. Okay. So polynomials up to degree n, well, polynomials up to degree n in n variables. That's a huge number. That does grow exponentially. Okay. However, the next thing I can do is if I identify all the H's and correspondingly all the T's, I can just mod out by every H is equal to every other H, every T is equal to every other T, then I get a polynomials in a single variable, and polynomials in a single variable of degree n, there are only n of those. So the overall dimension over the space of rational numbers of the same thing is more like n cubed, and that's definitely, you know, that's easy, that's not big. Okay? Finally, when you end up with a knot, all the H's have to be, there is only one H at the end anyway. So you don't lose anything by identifying all the variables in advance. Okay? Anyway, so that's the main theorem. Now, what's the proof? So the proof is, you just show that well, you just explain how to compute the answer, and you show that when you compute the answer, you never stray, so you always stay within that space. That's all. Okay? So basically, first of all, the value of an individual crossing is, the omega part is 1. So the scalar part in front is 1. The L part is H times L with coefficient 1. Had it been a negative crossing, it would have been with a minus sign. I should have added I guess I could add, because this is all interactive, right? So I could just add R to the... Oh, how do you do a plus minus in Mathematica? I'm not sure. Escape PM? No. I don't know. I don't know how to do it other than that, okay? Anyway, you know, I could have done S for a sign. Over here, there will be an S multiplying everything, just to get the inverse. And then over here, there will be a sign S here, or and a sign S here, and all the other signs cancel. But anyway, it's still integer coefficient quadratic form, and here quadratic form with coefficients, which is a rational function in the variables h and e to the h. So that's fine. Okay? And then, how does the computation proceed? Now suppose I have several crossings, then the invariant will just be the product of the invariants of the individual crossings. Okay? So basically, you will be taking the same exponential multiplied by itself several times, but with different variables each time. So each time using the variables corresponding to the names of the strands of these of each of these crossings. So 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever, 5, 6, and right. And if you take several exponentials, so the omega parts are still one. If you take several exponentials and multiply them, you'll get the sum of the L's and the sum of the Q's, and sums of linear there's basically nothing to show. Okay, this done, you will get that the invariant of the tangle you're now looking at, which is a tangle like this, is of the relevant form. So is of the form omega e to the L plus Q written on a bunch of elfs, a bunch of strands, each of which the variables are ordered like elfs. Okay? And now I want to start stitching the strands together. So I want to stitch this to that, for example. Okay? And now I have so the result will be some omega e to the L plus Q, but now placed, on a thing that looks like elf, but these are different variables. So if I was doing a stitching M1, 2 into 1, then these would be the one variable, these would be the two variables. And what I want is to somehow rewrite it. So I want to rewrite this as the ordering of something, but where I just use one set of variables. So E1, L1, F1. Okay? So for this, I need to know, so the way I'm going to do it is, first of all, I'm going to swap the E across the F and see. I want to rewrite the same expression using is swapped with F's, okay? But for that, I would have to change the formula. I would need a different formula if I want to write the is on the other side of the F's. It's clearly doable because I have commutation relations that allow me to swap is and F's. Okay, but the formula will have to change, and then I swap the E across the L, and so on. And then And then, so as an intermediate step, so somewhere in between here and here, I will have an intermediate step where I've reached the place where the E's are adjacent, the L's are adjacent, and the F's are adjacent. And once they are adjacent, I can just identify them. So, I mean, instead of a formula with E1 and E2, where you put E1 next to E2, I can just declare that E1 is equal to E2 in the formula, and then I no longer need to keep track of two different variables. So that will be the last step, but the step before it is how to swap an E across an F, how to swap an E across an L, and I need to tell you how to swap an F across an L. Okay? And this is exactly what the lemma does. So the lemma tells you, if you have any thing like this, and you want to swap an L across an E, you can rewrite it. So you have it's written as LE, and you want to write it as EL, then the thing you have to use is, then the formula changes from this to that. Okay. And this is the most general thing that could have occurred, because basically because, so by the way, I mean, here I wrote L and E, but I really meant LI and EJ. It could have been any pair of variables. And so basically this is the most general thing that could occur, because L can only be, the only way an L can appear in such a formula is if it's multiplied by some gamma, if it's coming from the quadratic form L, and then it's multiplied by some gamma, where gamma is in itself a linear combination with integer coefficient of H's. So gamma is a scalar, okay? And the only thing that can multiply E is, or the only place E could come from, is from the Q part of the formula, and then what multiplies it is some beta, and beta is going to be a linear combination with scalar coefficients of f's. Now, f's don't commute, but I also don't change the way they're placed. I'm only moving the L and the E across each other. I'm not changing the way f's are placed, so I may as well regard them as commuting variables or placed in the same place. Okay? So this lemma is enough to sort an L across an E, any L across any E in any such formula. Similarly, for sorting F's across L's, and let's talk about sorting F's across E's at the end. Okay, because that's the hardest one. But first of all, let's just implement it. Okay, so so I need a mathematical name for an expression like omega e to the L plus Q. So I'll just declare that that this is called in Mathematica E of omega L Q. So E of omega L Q just stands for this. Okay? And then I need to tell you how to simplify such a thing. So my naming for simplify is CF. I usually use the word CF because CF stands for canonical form. How do I bring a thing like this to canonical form? Well, I simplify the omega, I simplify the L, and I simplify the Q independently. Then, how do I multiply two such things, right? I need to multiply two such things because Well, because I sometimes need to multiply tangles. So the way you multiply two such things is, well, how do you multiply two such things? You multiply the omegas and you add the L's and you add the Q's. So I hereby declare that the product of two such E expression is the canonical form of multiply the omegas, add the L's, add the Q's. And finally, how do you check if two such things are equal? You simplify omega 1 equals omega 2, L1 equals L2, and Q1 equals Q2, and I think I don't even need this. I think it's a remnant from an older program. I don't even use it here. Okay? Then let me start implementing this lemma. Okay? So, first of all, R should be this. Okay? So, the way I do it is I will overload the expression E. So when E is fed with a symbol for a crossing, so a symbol for a crossing is X, and then a sign on top which says if it's a positive or a negative crossing, and then two indices I and J, where I is the overstrand and J is the understrand. So when you feed E with a symbol for a crossing, then the output becomes the value of that crossing. So the omega part is 1, the L part is HILJ, and the Q part is this, which I copied from here. And if the crossing is negative, it's the same thing with a few minus signs. And finally, if you feed E with a product of crossings, then you apply E to each factor in the product. So you apply E to each crossing independently and you multiply the results. So the expression corresponding to a product of three crossings, right? Here is a product of three crossings, and in fact this is the product that represents the trefoil knot. So the expression corresponding to it is this. Okay? This should be read in the order, you know, ELF1, ELF2, ELF3, and I want to simplify it. Okay? Anyway, one further thing. So I need to tell you how to order an expression, an E expression, given a certain specifications, given a certain ordering. So the answer is, so basically this is the place where I declare that E really stands for that. Okay? So the ordering of an E expression, given some specification, is just the usual ordering of omega E to the L plus Q using these specifications. However, if you remember, in this ordering operator, I only went up to some bounded degree, and I had to keep track of the degrees, and I had a variable h bar that kept track of the degrees, and so far I didn't put h bar in any of these places, so I have to put it here. So if you look here and you see an E or an H, you replace it by and so it's, if you see an X which is either an E or an H, you replace it by H bar times X. So basically all the E's and all the H gets mapped by H bar to make the degrees work. And then now I can recompute the trefoil. Okay? So take the expression corresponding to the product of three crossings, read it in the ELF order for all of the variables that appear, and finally, just for simplicity, set all the H's to H, to a single H. So here it is, and just for fun, let's compute. So I called it T1$2. Here. So let's compare if T1$1 is equal to T1$2. The answer is true. Okay. So next I need to implement the LE swaps and the FL swaps. And both are, again, everything is completely trivial at the end, okay? So the only thing that's hard here is the syntax, and maybe I shouldn't have used such a complicated syntax, okay? So I want to normal order. So NO stands for normal order, so bring to normal order. So something is given in the order LE, and I want to bring it to the normal order, which is EL, okay? So I want to normal order within an expression E omega LQ, I want to normal order the variable FI with the variable LJ, or EI with LJ. Notice that the formulas to order L's and F's are the same. The formulas here are the same. The only thing that differs is whether you is... So, in the L formulas, the L is first, and in the F formulas, the L is second. Okay? There is also a sign difference in the commutation relations. But I'm also trying to order them in the opposite direction. So the right hand side end up being the same. So I'm kind of using this in writing this as a single formula. So x, if x is either of f or e subscript I, and then I have an LJ as well, then the normal ordering of X with LJ is the operation given on the right. Now what's the operation? So first of all, I have to figure out what's gamma and what's beta, and then I have to write a formula for the answer. So what's gamma? Gamma is the derivative with respect to LJ of L. Right, gamma is whatever multiply LJ. So I just need to take the derivative of L with respect to LJ. Alpha, likewise, is the derivative with respect to XI of Q, where X is either E or F. Okay? And then the output is, so if you look at these formulas, omega isn't changed. There's not even an omega. I mean, there's no omega on the left, no omega on the right. It's not change. Omega also is a scalar. It doesn't contain L or E. So reversing the order of L and E should not affect the scalar. So omega is unchanged. L is unchanged. Indeed, the L part is the gamma L from here. And the gamma L, and then there is it's the same L part here. So the L part isn't changed. In the Q part, you have E to the gamma, right. So here beta became alpha. Sorry, it should have been, I mean, here the formulas are written in terms of the name beta, and here they are written in terms of alpha. So that's just the change of name. So then on the right-hand side, I have e to the gamma times beta x. So this becomes e to the gamma alpha x. And finally, I have to add the rest of q. So all the parts of q that are unaffected. The parts of Q that are unaffected are the parts of Q where the variable XI is sent to zero. So I'm just adding this back in. So that's it. Okay? Now, the only problem is, well, I wanted to demo it. I wanted to give you an example. And I wanted to use this as an example. Right? But unfortunately, all occurrences of E and L here that are adjacent, so that it would make sense to swap them, are already in EL order. Likewise, all occurrences of F and E, of F and L, are already in LF order. So there's just nothing I could use this, nothing I could do in this example. I mean, I will need this operation later, because, for example, I will want to swap this E across this F, and then I will have to swap L's and E's. But at the moment, there is nothing to do. Okay, so I couldn't give you an example. So I had to, just for the sake of the example, I had to define another function, which is the abnormal order. So A and O. And abnormal order goes the other way. So if something is written in the EL order, it produces the formula for it when you write it in the LE order, which is the abnormal order. So the abnormal ordering function is exactly the same as the normal ordering function. The only difference is that there is a minus sign. The gamma, e to the gamma here becomes e to the minus gamma. Okay. So for example, let's look at a few examples, okay? So maybe I should reprint our current expression. So this is the value of the trefoil tangle before any stitching. So it's just three independent crossings. And this is the formula for the value if you write, if you would write it in ELF order on each strand. Okay? Now, I want to apply the operator that would reorder E2 with L3. So that corresponds to, where is it? Here, E2 and L3. Reverse the order of these two. Okay? So I get a different formula. I mean, if you look at it, there is a slight difference. I think this term changes by some exponential. And that's what it should be, but there is a slight difference. But the point is that if you took this formula, or this formula, and ordered it in the original order, that should be the same as that formula in the order in which you swapped the order of E2 and L3. So take the second formula, namely this E and abnormal the order of E2 and L3, and interpreting the ordering L1, F1, L3, E2, that's the wrong ordering for these two things, and then continue. So this should be the same as the original formula with the original ordering. Okay? So, you know, I could check it, and the answer is true. Okay? And in fact, each of these is the value of the trefoil. So they're equal, and they're both the value of the trefoil. So here is one formula for the value of the trefoil. Here is another formula for the value of the trefoil, written in a different order. And again, my purpose is to simplify the order until the at the cost of making the formula more complicated. Okay. And I think I did another check, and I'm not sure why I did another check, because I think, you know, it's not clear that it adds to the understanding. But anyway, here's the other check, and it again. Maybe the last thing that I did, maybe another silly check that I did was I sort of switching the ordering and then switching it back returns to where you were. Okay, now comes the last formula and how it is implemented, but also why is it enough? Okay? So the last formula tells you how to reorder an e to the beta e plus alpha f plus delta e f from the fe order to the ef order. Okay? And I claim that that's all you need. First of all, you only need to switch swap f and e, ever. I mean, given that we already have all the other swaps. Okay? But then, if I need to swap an f and an e, I don't care about omega because omega has no f's and e. I don't care about l. I only care about q. But q can be written, so in this case, q can be written as basically it has a part that has no e and f, or no, I'm swapping some specific ei with some specific fj. So it has a part that has no ei and no fj, plus a part that has only the ei, so I think that part I call beta, plus a part that has only the fj, so that part I call alpha, plus a part that has both, that in which the e and the f are paired, and this part I call delta. Now, in this decomposition, beta is a
Q0 again?
What? Q0 is the part that doesn't involve my e and f at all. Right? Q is a quadratic form in many e's and many f's.
Right, okay, sorry.
And I'm swapping one e across one f.
Right, okay.
Okay? So beta is a linear combination of f's, right? If you look at beta, it's a linear combination of f's with scalar coefficients. But again, I can consider it as a scalar because the f's that appear here are only the f's that are not swapped. The f that is swapped, I've put here. The part where okay? So beta has f's, but not my f, not the fj's that I work with. So beta is not really a scalar, but the variables that occur in it are in fixed places in the expression. So it doesn't matter if I swap the location of some other f with some other e. So likewise, the alpha is again not a scalar, but can be regarded as a scalar, and delta is actually a scalar. Okay, and now I just implement it. So if I want to normal order fi with ej, maybe I shouldn't tell you what the k does at the moment. I'll tell you in a minute. You know what? I will tell you. So basically, we're almost out of time. Yeah. So basically, I need to rewrite the answer in terms of okay. Basically, I need the name for the variables with respect to which. Why am I doing this? Maybe I should have avoided. Basically, you know what, ignore the K for a minute. Okay, just pretend it's not there. Okay, so basically what I do is to normal order an omega L, an E omega L Q, I look at the right-hand side, and I just write it in the right form. So omega becomes nu times omega, L stays L, Q is all of that, so Q becomes omega times minus alpha beta H plus beta E plus alpha F plus delta E F plus the part of Q that's untouched, that's what I called Q0, so that's Q where you set F, I, N, E, J to 0. And then within this formula, you just replace nu by 1 plus h delta inverse copied from here, and then alpha is the derivative of q with respect to f, so alpha is the f part of q, so it's the derivative of f with respect to q, but setting ej to 0 because I don't want to capture this part as well. And then beta is the derivative of q with respect to e, setting f to 0, and delta is the second derivative of q with respect to f and e. And that's all. That's the complete implementation. So here is the result of applying an FE swap. And then let's compare. So applying, so this is the original value, and F3 with E4 is swapped. So F3 with E4 is swapped, and I want to write the result in terms of E7 and F7. That's also what I did here, I suppose. I wrote the result in terms of F7 and E7. So some variable names were changed to 7. It doesn't matter. These are dummy variables. These are, right, they are placed on a universal, in a universal enveloping algebra. It doesn't matter what I call them as temporary variables. So I compare, the answer is two, is true. It's time to finish. It's a bad time because we're almost done. Let's quit. Let's stop. So.